Claire Frost was born.
I asked Claire Frost where she was born, and she said she was born in Fort Yukon, Alaska. Then I asked her what her parents did for a living when she was a little girl. She said her parents used to trap along the Porcupine River, and they used to go down to Crow Flats and trap and live in the bush. I asked her when they moved to Old Crow, and she said that she was so young that she doesn't remember. She said that when they got to Old Crow, that a long time ago there weren't odd jobs for the people to do. So they used to go trapping, and they used to go hunting, and whatever. Claire said that the only place that there was a store where they could get food from was from Rampart House. She said some used to go down by river, but most of them used to go over land to Rampart House. And then they would come up the river tramping. She said that what she meant by tramping was there would be a canoe or a boat in the river, and with somebody steering the boat away from the bank of the river, and somebody would have a rope strapped over their chest, and the rope would be tied to the boat, and they would pull the boat up river. And the person in the boat would make sure that the boat didn't run into the bank, and that's the way they tramped up the river. I asked her if they had any doctors or nurses as far back as she could remember. And she says that she was quite small at the time, so she doesn't remember too much about it. I asked her if she remembered anything about medicine or anything, but she says she doesn't remember, anything. She says that the amount of people getting sick now is certainly a lot worse than what she can remember from before. People never ever really got sick before. She says she doesn't remember anybody ever getting sick until a white man started coming and bringing their sicknesses with them. I asked her how she felt about the missionaries coming in and teaching a completely different religion than what the Indian people were used to as their own spiritual religion, as to the religion that the missionaries were bringing in. I don't think she understood my question very well, because she said that she knew that the Anglican people were very strong, and they couldn't be changed to being a Catholic person, and of course vice versa, the Catholic people could not be changed into being an Anglican person. I think she felt that I was speaking about religion at the moment, not about religion as to when the ministers first came around to there, before there were any at all. I said to her that the other woman had mentioned that they, a long time ago, when somebody had a headache, they used to cut their two places in their head, and they would bleed it, and then the people, the blood would be gone, so the pressure would be gone, resulting in no headache. And the nurses and doctors later on had disapproved of the Indian people doing such a thing, so the people were not allowed to do it. So I asked Clara what she felt about the people not being allowed to practice their old ways of medicine. And she said that she said that as far as she knew it was a very unjust thing for the doctors and the nurses to just pass judgment on the people, because she very rarely heard of anybody getting blood poison as a result of this operation. But the main step that the doctors and nurses used as to stopping this was that a woman had gone out, and she was feeding her dog some rabbit, and the dog had bitten her by accident while he was taking the rabbit from her hand. He'd bitten her thumb, and her thumb got blood poison, and she didn't know what to do with it. So another woman cut her arm, and even after she was cut to let the blood out, her hand just continued to get worse and worse, and eventually she died. And the nurses and doctors, of course, say that it was as a result of her being cut and bled, and but they can't really prove if it was she did die from blood poison, but they couldn't prove if it was a result of her being cut or from her being bit by the dog. But they still used it as grounds of stopping the Indian people from doing such operations. I then asked her if she went to school at all. She said that she had gone to the Carcross residential school in Carcross. I asked her how she felt about going to the residential school and if she liked it. She said that she felt the school was, she was very fortunate to be able to go to the school, and that she really liked getting educated. But they never used to go home at all. They'd go there. Instead, they wouldn't be allowed to go home for summer holidays or for long weekends or Christmas time or Easter or anything like the students nowadays do. They would have to stay there all year round. If they were going for 4 years, they'd stay there for four straight years. And she said that during the winter, it didn't seem so bad because they were attending classes and that. But during the summer, they had more or less hardly anything to do. There was no school, nothing. And they used to get lonesome, get homesick and that. I asked her if she felt that the school was strict at all. She said to me that the schools were quite strict, but that's all she would say. She then said to me, I don't know if you want to put this down on tape, but I said to her that it was fine, that we were putting down the way the women felt. So I then used myself as an example to her, telling her that I had gone to a residential school and that I found that it was very strict, and that I had talked to some other women around the Yukon and they had found that a lot of the residential schools were strict. And at this she seemed to loosen up. Then I asked her whether her kids went to school in a residential school, and she said no. And I asked her why, and she said because her husband was Jack Frost, and he was a white man, so naturally she was a non-status Indian, which her kids were not allowed to go to any sort of a residential school because they were, according to the Indian Act, they weren't Indians. She said that they used to have to send their children to the public schools, but since there were none around there, they had to send them all the way to Dawson City to go to school, and they would have to stay in the hostel there. But they would have to pay a fee. They had to pay a fee for their children to go to school there, and they just couldn't afford it because there just wasn't enough jobs around or enough money for them to be able to afford to send their kids to school. She said she used to take their kids and they would go out trapping, because if they didn't trap, they would starve because there was no checks like they get nowadays, welfare or old age pension or unemployment insurance or whatever, so they had to go trapping or they didn't survive. I asked her how she felt about being a non-status Indian just because she married a white man. She was not entitled to any of the any rights under the Indian Act laws anymore, because she was now a non-status Indian. She said that she felt that she never really thought about it because she had the responsibility of bringing up her kids and of sending them to school and feeding them without any help at all. She said that a lot of times they had hard times, but she never asked for help. But a few years ago, she was by herself, and the welfare came in and offered to help her. So they are helping her with her wood and a few other things now. She says she feels proud that she raised 9 children without any help, without having to go to anybody to get any help to raise her children. I asked her if the gold rush affected her or her parents in any way. She said that when the gold rush was on, everyone just seemed to stay home and mind their own business, because to them it was a long ways away to have to go all the way to Dawson just for gold. I then asked her if her marriage to Jack Frost had been arranged by her parents, but she said no, they had wanted to get married, so they got married. She says, but of course she didn't ask him, he asked her to get married. I asked her if she found there was any class differences around there between the white people and the Indian people. She said that she felt that there's hardly any white people up in Old Crow to start off with, but if any of them did come around, you know, that weren't the few that were already there, it just depended on themselves if they were felt that they weren't too good, you know, and they could talk to the Indian people, you know, they were just people like everybody else, you know, then they were accepted. But some people would come there and just sort of stick their nose in the air and not bother to talk to anybody because they were just a little bit too good for everybody else. Then they were treated accordingly. They just weren't, you know, people didn't go up to them and talk to them and whatever. I asked her if they still had feasts or potlatches, and she says, of course. She says, July 1st. So I says, well, what is it for? And she says, oh, we celebrate Dominion Day. So I guess once again there was sort of a misunderstanding in the way I questioned her. So then I specifically asked her if they had a potlatch, for example, when one of their tribe dies, and she said that they did have a potlatch. She said that she felt that the potlatches of the Indian people around Old Crow were different than the potlatches of southern Yukon, because she had been to one down in Whitehorse, and she said that they didn't have spirit houses, for example, when they buried their dead. She says that she found down here everything was divided in 2 clans, the Crows and the Wolves. And for example, if a crow died, then the wolf would throw a party, the wolf would not celebrate, but they would eat at the feast, and the crows would look after everything and feed them. But up there, she says, the men would go and dig the grave for the body, and the women would all cook. Then first of all, they would feed the men, then the women would eat, and then the children would eat. But they weren't divided up in different clans like they are down here. She said that the body was put into a separate room by itself. She says that after the feast, they have a service for the person that died, and then they just take it back and bury it, say a few words over the grave, and that's it. She says that they burn all the belongings of the whoever died, their clothes and whatever, they burn it all. I asked her if she did any beadwork or whatever in her spare time, and she told me that she did knit. She knits gloves for people and she sells them to them. I asked her what else she did in her spare time, and she said that she just worked around the house, sort of took it easy, carried water, carried in wood from outside. And then I asked her where she got her meat from. She said that her youngest son isn't married yet, so he, whenever he goes out and gets meat, he helps her, he gives her some, And he keeps her well supplied with meat and whatever. And during the spring, she goes with her one of her granddaughters. That's one of Stephen Frost's daughters, Stephen and Ethel Frost. And she takes them to Crow Flats, and they go ratting with her youngest son. And he catches all the rats, and they skin them and whatever, you know, just to help him out. Then I asked her if there was anything else she wanted to talk about, and she said that she didn't think so. She seemed to be very negative towards speaking to me with the tape recorder going, but I don't know, her attitude was really weird, because she figured that a lot of what she was saying shouldn't be put down on tape. So I feel that she held back a lot more than she really knew.